Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the newest edition of the Speedy Digest. I'm Joseph Walker, along with my co-hosts Brett and Glenn. How are you guys doing tonight?
Pretty good.
That's what I like to hear. We're going road course racing this weekend, guys. Who's excited?
Me.
Oh, you know I am. I am a fan of road courses, man.
I'm telling you, it's the perfect situation. It's finally we get to shut up one of those people that say, oh, NASCAR's just about left turns. Well, no, we're going right turn racing this weekend. Now, I want to ask you guys, we have some drivers racing in the K&M Pro Series West this weekend. Kyle Larson, Austin Dillon, Michael Annette, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., and Justin Allgaier. Do you believe this is going to help them during the race? In the Cup Series, of course.
Ooh, Brett,
I don't know.
Go ahead and open up with that.
Well, I don't know. You know, it's definitely something that we don't see quite too often over in K&M Pro Series. You know, usually it's Nationwide Series or something like that. But, you know, with these type of cars, I really have no idea. You know, I think they're kind of like the ARCA Racing Series style. So, you know, they might not help much. But, you know, it has to help some, you know, for drivers to get their on-track stuff. And you know, in Nationwide Series and Truck Series, you know, a lot of Cup drivers move down in the series to run for Cup organizations. But, you know, going down the entry list, and I think Larson's the only one that's actually running for Turner Scott Motorsports, and everyone else is for Bill McAnally, and there's another team on there that hasn't raced much. So, you know, I think it's definitely going to help those teams, you know, but look on the entry list. I think the driver, and I'm going to say this already right now because, you know, Glenn and I, we don't do a pick challenge for K&M Pro Series, but I think Kyle Larson definitely going to be the driver to watch in that race, and it's certainly going to be fun to monitor how these drivers are going to end at K&M car because, you know, we don't see it quite too often. So, you know, it'll just be weird but interesting.
Now I'm going to ask Kyle the same question. I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce Kyle Magda, of course. And
yeah,
and
thanks for having
Kyle.
Me. Yeah, you know, the nerve of you. No, I'm just kidding. But, I think what Brett was saying was it's going to be a stacked field. You also have Matt Tiff. I want to add that name because, you know, he ran so well in the ARCA race at New Jersey Motorsports Park last month, and I was there to see that. And he had a pretty good run. I mean, he had the third or fourth best car all day, and, you know, he's definitely there in the win. But like you guys were saying, you know, there's also Justin Allgaier as well, a late addition. He's going to be driving for Admiral Racing, normally driven by Kelly Admiral. So, you know, I think it's going to be a really stacked race. So, I think, you know, yeah, Michael Annette, Austin Dillon, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., kind of baffled why Stenhouse is in a Toyota. Someone brought that up to me. But, you know, that's just how it is. But, I mean, Kyle Larson is going to be strong. But right now I'm going to go with Justin Allgaier because I think with his road course experience, him running – actually, he has a win at Montreal a couple years ago in the Nationwide Series, and he finished second at Road America last year. So I really think that Justin Allgaier will have a little bit of an upper edge because, like I said, he typically runs well on the road courses.
Mm, that's true.
Well, here's
the real problem that they're going to have. The problem is that it's two different cars that they have. You know, K&N's car is very light, and it's very similar to what they used to run in 2006. And the Generation 6 car is a bit heavier than that. Really, the only thing that I think that will really help them is mostly braking points and also, like, how the track is and elevation-wise and all that kind of stuff because you can have breaking points over in the K&N series, but when you translate that over to the Sprint Cup car, you're going to have to change it because you can't throw that particular Cup car into a corner like we used to with the old style chassis. So really, I think it's only going to help in terms of finding your benchmarks and hitting your marks out there, And, you know, you guys mentioned some of the Cup drivers going to be running the K&N Pro Series. I think it's going to help Austin Dillon out a lot because, you know, Ty Dillon was really good on the road courses in the Camping World Truck Series at Watkins Glen and also last year at the Canadian road course. But I don't know. I don't know how much it's really going to help, but I would say Austin Dillon is probably going to be the one that comes out on top, really.
I don't know. I mean, Austin Dillon he was decent during the road courses last year in the Nationwide Series. He didn't excel by any chance, but he was decent, especially considering the circumstances that he had to deal with last year. But the one that I'm worried about is Ricky Stenhouse Jr. He was atrocious in the Nationwide Series during the races at the road courses over the past few years. And I'm worried that with that atrociousness, how is he going to deal with the Cup Series? And obviously he didn't do exceptionally poor last year at the road courses. He was respectable, but he could do better, especially since Roush Family Racing is struggling, which we will once again talk about tonight. But they're struggling mightily, especially after what happened in Michigan. I'm just wondering, could this be a capitalization race for Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and that entire RFR camp?
Yeah, it sure can, and I just want to just go with what you were saying, Joseph. Actually, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. actually had some good runs in his second year of Nationwide. I think he got a top five at Watkins Glen, so he hasn't been atrocious. You know, I think he finished 11th at Road America. He was 4th at, like I said, Watkins Glen. He was 12th at Montreal. So I think, you know, when he ran more, he got better every year. But, you know, with the Cup side, I mean, for him, you know, with the road courses, it's kind of a wild card. I mean, you know, fuel mileage comes down, and sometimes, you know, maybe you have the best car out there. It doesn't always win the race. So I think, you know, it could definitely be a big race for Roush Fenway and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Same thing with Carl Edwards, I think, because, you know, he runs gun road courses. So, you know, for Ricky, I think, you know, getting some extra some track time, what you guys were saying, I really think the extra track time is really going to benefit Austin Dillon, Kyle Larson, Michael Annette, Justin Allgaier. I think it's going to benefit all of them. Because, you know, when you've never been on a racetrack before, kind of like with Kyle Larson of Pocono, he never saw Pocono until the Sprint Cup test. And then he ran the ARCA race and got an extra 200 miles under his belt. So I think with getting that experience, it will help them a little bit. I mean, I know that the K&N West cars and the Cup cars are a little different, but I think even just getting that track time is so valuable.
Brett?
Yeah, you know, I think it's definitely, you know, as I said earlier, you know, it's going to be interesting how much it's going to help the drivers, you know, this weekend. But, you know, as Kyle was saying, I think Justin Allgaier is definitely going to be a driver to watch. And, you know, we'll just have to wait and see how it works out.
Yeah, now within the next 20 minutes, we're going to have Jake the Snake Crum come on to our show. And he's going to discuss some things with us. It's going to be a fun interview, I guarantee it. He's always fun to talk to, this guy. And we're also going to have NASCAR Nationwide Series Rookie of the Year candidate, Chris Buescher, on our show. Now, I want to get to the Cup Series a little bit. At Michigan, Jimmy Johnson obviously won, but this is his third win now, and as Brett and I were discussing earlier, he's about to win his 70th career race, which is starting to get up there. And I want to ask you guys, is Jimmy Johnson going to have more wins than David Pearson, than Darrell Waltrip, than evidently even Jeff Gordon?
Oh,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I think with Jimmy Johnson, why am I bringing up Jeff Gordon? With Jimmy Johnson, I definitely think that Darrell Waltrip and Bobby Allison, those guys are well within reach. You know, it just depends how much longer Jimmy Johnson runs. And then, you know, I think it all depends, you know, if he ever catches Jeff Gordon, how many years he runs as well. You know, I know he's been complaining about his back a little bit, but, you know, it seems like it's getting better. And, you know, what you've heard from Jeff is when he's ready to retire, he'll retire. And so who knows when that could be. So, you know, I think Jimmy Johnson, you know, I think right now he's in a good spot. He's still winning races. You know, I mean, doesn't win a championship for 2 years and he comes back strong and he wins number six. So I think, you know, I still think, you know, I think he's still going to get a seventh championship. I think he's going to tie Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt at some point, whether it be this year or in the next 5 years. But, you know, I think it just depends how long Jimmy wants to run. You know, he has a family. But, you know, it's up to him. It's up to, you know, it's a consensus on the decision, how long he runs, I think. And so I'd say Jimmy is probably going to get to, I'm going to say he's going to get to 90 at least. I don't think he's going to catch Pearson, but I'm going to say at least 90.
Interesting analogy. I concur what Kyle said.
What about you? Well, go ahead.
Anyway, I concur what Kyle said, you know. I mean, I think Johnson's definitely, you know, he has a lot of years left in him in the Sprint Cup Series, and I think it's definitely going to be a threat to win more races. And, you know, he's at the high of his career right now, so, you know, I definitely think that he's going to be at least to 100, but, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. But, and I think it's going to get a lot more to come.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that Johnson himself, if he keeps up this pace, he's winning 3 to 5 races every year at the worst. And that's the worst-case scenario. And arguably, even though Jeff Gordon had double-digit winning seasons and Johnson has seldom done that, I believe that Johnson is on pace to surpass him within the next few years, possibly. I mean, even though Jeff Gordon is arguably running the best he's been since around 2007, 2008, I think that Jeff Gordon is going to max out around 90 wins.
Interesting. You know what? Jimmy is definitely going to, you know, win a bunch more races. I definitely feel like he can catch David Pearson and go into second, but I really don't think he's going to catch Richard Petty. I mean, it's a long shot, but see, the issue is that, you know, back then they were racing almost like, you know, every 4 days or something. There was a race here, and then 2 days later there's a fairground race and stuff like that. With 36 races per season in the Sprint Cup Series, Jimmy would have to be, you know, in a ton more seasons, plus he would need to win almost the entire season to even catch Richard Petty. He will definitely catch Dale Earnhardt Sr. this year, possibly. He will catch Jeff Gordon eventually. And probably when he gets his 100, you know, when he passes David Pearson, it's not going to be this year or next year, but I think he could end up catching him by the time we hit 2017.
That's interesting. Now, we're also joined now by Marshall Gable. Marshall, what's your take on this?
Well, you know, just since this is a radio show and we have to have a little bit of conflict, right, I'm going to say that Jimmy Johnson doesn't get past Bobby Allison. I think that with the talent that's coming up through the Nationwide Series ranks right now with Chase Elliott, Dylan Kwasniewski, and guys like that, I think in 4 or 5 years from now, they'll be the ones that we're going to be talking about to go catch Jeff Gordon and stuff like that, because they will be dominating this sport within the years to come. So I'm gonna make this a little bit. I'm gonna go against you guys, and I'm gonna say that Jimmy Johnson doesn't get by Jeff Gordon. I think he'll get close, but I don't think he'll get there by the end of his career. I just think that he's almost into his 40s. He's 38 years old, so I think he's getting close to the point where he's gonna just top out.
I have to disagree with you on that. I mean, there is honestly no end in sight for this guy winning races. Since he was a rookie, the worst he's finished is 6th in points. That's incredible and really unforeseen in any other racing division. Let's compare it to baseball for a minute. Say if a guy like, Mike Trout, for example, say if he was able to hit over 300 with 25 home runs every single season for 15 years in a row. That's not going to happen. There's going to be points in your career where you're not having the greatest of seasons. And you know what? Jimmy Johnson has had poor seasons. Just look at 2011. He only won 2 races only, which is probably more than most people get, obviously, but it's not acceptable to his standards or Hendrick Motorsport standards. And you look at this year, and you're like, oh, he started out of the first 8 races bad. Guess what? 3 out of the last 4 races he won. So you know what? There is no end in sight for this guy winning races. Now, on to our next topic. We only have a few minutes before NASCAR Camping World Truck Series driver Jake Crum comes on. Let's talk about the road course ringers a minute. There's only Boris Senn and Alex Kennedy in the race this weekend. What are your thoughts on that? Ron Fellows is a minute. You have all these guys that, over the past, they've been racing the road courses, and they used to be very successful. Over the past few years, rides have been hard to come by, especially for these one-off deals. Do you believe that the end to the road course ringer is coming soon?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's already started, honestly. You know, you haven't really seen, I mean, you've seen road course ringers, but like you were saying that you haven't been in the best equipment, at least on the Cup side. I mean, Nationwide and trucks you have. I mean, you saw with AJ Allmendinger. I mean, I don't know if you'd really count him as a road course ringer, but, you know, I've seen guys like Boris Senn win races and Ron Fellows, you know, but that was saying that, you know, I mean, when Ron Fellows was driving, and that was for Junior Motorsports. And, you know, so I think, you know, I think in the last couple of years, I just don't think that, I think that the actual Cup drivers have came with, have gotten up to speed. You know, I know Boris Senn taught so many drivers like Carl Edwards and Casey Kane about road course racing. You know, and I think, you know, they know the tricks now, and they can apply it to racing. So, you know, I haven't seen much noise out of road course ringers, at least in the Cup Series. I mean, I know Ron Fellows finished runner-up a couple times at Watkins Glen. I think it was 1999 and 2004. So, you know, I mean, you see ringers run well once in a while, but not as much as they used to. So, you know, so I don't think they make as big as a deal as they have. I mean, you know, you have one this weekend. You have Alex Tagliani in the 22. You know, and he has run well on Nationwide. He finished second in Montreal in 2011, and he won the pole there in 2012. So, you know, he definitely can contend both years. So, you know, so I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it happens. I just think that era is almost over. I mean, they're almost extinct, road course ringers. You know, it's just the Cup drivers now. It seems like they have the will and the desire just to, like, do it on the road courses and learn. And, you know, you just don't see it as often as you used to anymore.
Well, you're absolutely right. And it's almost like they're going away more and more every year. And we're seeing that more and more every year. But thankfully, at least Boris Senn is sticking around. Now, I want to ask you guys, remember when the road course ringers attempted to run the oval tracks back in, like, 2005 and 2006? Right. I want to ask you, say if Boris Senn hypothetically contends for the win this weekend in that number 32 car, would they give him some oval races?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, they're two totally different things. So, you know, it's definitely would be interesting to see how he would do in that number 12 oval, but I highly doubt that they would put him in that car for oval races.
Yeah, me too. I mean, he tried to do it that one year, and it didn't really turn out very well. I definitely think Boris Senn should stick with the road courses, and this weekend I think he's going to definitely be a threat because even though the 32 car is an underpowered team, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of skill and a little bit of pit strategy to put yourself up there at the front of the pack. I don't know if he can win, but maybe a top 5 spot or a top 10 spot is in his future.
Marshall, any thoughts?
I'm gonna disagree that Boris Senn would ever get an opportunity on an oval. I mean, while I was 5 or 6 years old when these road course ringers attempted the ovals, I still think that only 47 career starts. I mean, there's guys that are trying to you know, make their career like Chase Elliott, that have spent their entire lives and their entire tenure really building up to this moment. And, I mean, even last year, Boris said with an 18th at Sonoma and then 22nd at Watkins Glen, I believe. I mean, those stats aren't astonishing. So, I mean, I think that with the testing and everything that's going on now with Cup drivers, I mean, like A.J. Allmendinger, like you mentioned earlier, they're really focusing on this one race or two races at the road courses because they know that that's a prime opportunity to really score the win and grant themselves a chase berth. So, I mean, I think road course ringers are definitely going extinct, like Kyle said.
I mean, when you think about it, obviously it's unlikely that Borsette is going to contend for the win in that 32 card. But since it's so underfunded, number one, number two, they have a very limited alliance of Roush Fenway Racing. All they do is get their engines from them. That's basically it. They utilize old cars and parts. But say if for some reason strategy comes along and there's Frankie Stoddard and that whole team come up with this amazing fuel strategy. They contend for a top 10. Guess what? 7-Eleven and the other company that's on that car this weekend, which is AmeriGas, they're going to want more of Borsette. And that's how the sport is. It doesn't matter what someone's done in the past. Borsette is a respectable driver. Not that he's capable of running well on the speedways, especially in the equipment that can't even run in the top 30, which is irrelevant, but it's still something to talk about. I just believe that if sponsorship comes along, it doesn't matter. They're going to put him in the car. That's how it is for everyone. That's why you're seeing Alex Kennedy running at Pocono a few weeks ago, and that's why you're seeing him racing this weekend and the other road course, which is Watkins Glen. So when you think about it, it really all comes down to is sponsorship. Let's get to another point, though. All these drivers that come over from the IndyCar series, like Danica Patrick, Tony Stewart with his open-wheel background, and others, they're racing the road courses, obviously. Danica has not been successful on the road courses, nor was she successful in the IndyCar series when they raced on road courses. How do you think Danica's going to do this weekend, considering that Stewart Haas Racing itself has started to improve a ton over the past few weeks? Plus, Danica does have the open-wheel background, and she's improving as well. I'll start with Brett this time.
Well, you know, I think, you know, first of all, the IndyCar series and the NASCAR Sprint Cup series cars are two totally different things. But yeah, you know, it'll definitely be interesting to see how Danica's going to do this weekend. You know, she's had some great runs this year, and she's definitely been, you know, up there. So, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But I think she'll do just fine, and I'm sure she'll probably finish inside the top 15 or inside the top 20, but I think she'll have a decent day.
I think that with the one win in Japan from the IndyCar series a few years back, I believe 2008 or 7, I think that she's starting to hit her stride here in the NASCAR Sprint Cup series. She has some impressive finishes this year. I mean, really, she had the, I believe, top 10 finish at Kansas it was. So she's starting to put together races, and she's honestly impressing me. She's had some nice starts, and I think that that could easily continue into this weekend at Sonoma, and I wouldn't be surprised if she could notch a top 5 finish.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she's definitely had some success, I mean, at least in the Nationwide Series. I think she was running fourth at Road America on the last lap and then got punted by Jacques Villeneuve, and then she was leading at Montreal and a shoe got on the track somehow. But I'm not sure. I mean, you know, kind of like what you guys were saying. I know Danica does have some experience on the road courses. I haven't seen anything out of her yet on the road courses. I mean, I know Marcia, you're up at top 5. I just don't know. I mean, maybe a top 20, 25 at best for me. You know, I think she's going to really have to show me this weekend that she can really wheel the road courses, because I just don't know. I mean, I know she's definitely doing better than she has. I mean, like you said, Marshall 8th at Kansas, I mean, that's pretty good. And, you know, and Stewart Haas has been getting better every single week. You know, they just have to seal the deal and try to win the race. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how her and even, like, you know, her – her boyfriend, Ricky Stenhouse, how Seneca does. So, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. In fact, you know what, my thoughts on Danica is that she'll do just fine this weekend. I mean, road courses definitely fit her style. And plus, she ran this race on a different configuration in the IndyCar series, just a few minor changes, including the carousel turn. But still, you know, the road courses suit her style, and I think this would be her best shot besides Daytona in July, Talladega, and Watkins Glen to get another good finish here on the road course. All she needs to do is steal one of Kevin Harvick's Budweiser cars and put the GoDaddy on there, and boom, she'll be up at the top.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the end of the day, it's all about getting the job done. And I think Danica is starting to do that, honestly. She's improving steadily. Obviously, she's not stunning anyone, but she's getting there. And the same with her teammates. They're starting to improve. Look at Kurt Busch. He was struggling for weeks. And you know what? They're finally starting to turn the corner. Now, before we have Jake Crum on the show, Kyle Larson is going to be a father. He's 21 years old. He's a little bit more than, I would say, like 2 or 3 years older than me around. I want to ask you guys, one, is this going to be a distraction for him? And two, how do you think it's going to affect his personality?
Ooh.
I guess I'll start with that. You know, I look at, you know, some of these other drivers who have had kids, you know, and I think it helps their confidence. You know, we see it with Jimmy Johnson once that he had his daughters, you know, he's been having some good runs or sparked some momentum for his way. So, you know, I think it might help him, but, you know, it'll certainly be interesting to see how he's going to do the first 3 or 4 weeks after the baby comes. But you know, that'd certainly be interesting to monitor with a young driver like that.
Yeah, I thought with that whole thing, I mean, you know, with his schedule and how much he races, I mean, I'm just wondering how this is going to affect him. You know, I mean, you know, it's definitely great news, but, you know, so, but I just don't know how it's going to affect his racing schedule. You know, it's all he does is look, you know, all he does is race. That's all he does is a wheel man. You know, he races every single week, and I don't think there's been one week and he hasn't raced. Maybe Iowa, you know, the All-Star Race weekend. But, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, going forward as a parent, how this is going to affect them.
Yeah, I don't see necessarily it being detrimental to his racing career, but I certainly think for the first few seasons, possibly it could be a setback. Plus, I don't think it was necessarily the greatest choice. I mean, we don't have to get into all those articulates, but I don't think it was necessarily the best choice, especially not being even engaged to Brad's sweet sister. So I don't know if it was the best choice. Who knows if it was intentional, but I don't know if it'll be detrimental though.
Yeah, you know what? I'll just sum it up right here, very, very short and sweet. You know, I think it might affect him a little bit because, you know, he's so young. I mean, he's just a little bit older than I am. I mean, I'm 23 years old and he's probably like 25 or something. Really, I think that what he should have done is that he should have put a ring on it before ever thinking about starting to bake the bun in the oven.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's just weird how he's having it. He's not engaged or married, and I'm religious, so I'm not going to comment on that. I'm not bringing religion into this. But, I mean, it's questionable for sure. Now, we are joined by our wonderful guest, Jake Crum. How are you?
Hey, I'm all right, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. It's great to talk to you again.
Hey, not a problem, man. Anytime. Appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to get on here and talk with you guys.
Yeah, now you've had a busy couple of weeks, to say the least. You obviously had that incident with Ryan Ellis. And for those who haven't already read my article on you, I want you to give us your input about what happened during that day in Charlotte and how you dealt with it afterwards.
Well, you know, we've talked about this. I've spoke to a lot of different people about the situation. You know, it was just a mistake that shouldn't have happened. And, you know, we're on good terms now. I spoke with him in Dover when I went up there to get reapproved to go back to mile and a half tracks because, you know, unfortunately they took my mile and a half speedway license and speedway license after that incident. But, you know, I'm allowed to go back to the bigger tracks now. So, but yeah, we're on good terms. You know, there's no controversy there. No one's arguing, so we're good.
Now, how have you handled the criticism that you've been getting really since that incident with Ryan?
You just gotta overlook it. You know, there's fans out there that, you know, obviously are his fans, and then I've got fans that stick behind me, and then I've got people that boo me, which is fine, but you just have to overlook it and overcome it. You know, Kyle Busch has millions of fans that boo him week in, week out, and he still goes out and wins, so I'm not going to let it affect me.
Yeah, I mean, it's how the sport is, really, and I think that's what makes NASCAR so different from everyone else, that you guys do get criticism, but you also get a lot of feedback from fans, which helps you in the end. And I want to ask you, do you feel like your reputation has been tarnished since that wreck?
I don't. You know, at first, you know, you could somewhat see people, you know, just talking junk online and this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, you know, you just, like I said, you've got to overcome it, keep your head up, move forward, and do the best you can to prove to them that you're not the dirty driver that they think you are. And you know, that you know how to go out and finish races and finish well.
Now, I'm going to let our panel ask a few questions before I get back to you. So, guys, go ahead.
What's that?
All righty, I guess I'll go ahead and start. First off, howdy, Jake.
Hey, how are you? Who am I speaking with?
Yep, I'm doing great. I actually have two questions for you. What has been your favorite track to run on so far in your short career right now?
Well, Bristol, you know, I've had good and bad luck there. You know, I've went there and run well, and I've went there and had some major problems. So, I think Bristol's, you know, one of my best tracks and fun tracks to go to. So I guess the answer to your question is Bristol.
Awesome. And also, I noticed that you also have a foundation called the Greyhound Rescue Foundation of Tennessee. Can you explain to everybody and also to us panelists more about what is that about?
It's something that my buddy, we call him Stewie. His name's Sean Peters. He put that thing together that his family's a big lover of the Greyhound Foundation, so we've been running their sticker and everything for quite some time now. We try to get it on the truck or the car, you know, whatever we race, whether we're racing late models or trucks or whatever. We try to get them on the car to, you know, notify fans that, you know, abuse on animals or, you know, shouldn't be put up with, and just everything about the foundations, you know, pretty cool. Stewie and I, we spoke together a while back about that, and you know, I don't really, you know, like animals a lot, but you know, once we started talking about it, you know, I think it's a good cause to run their sticker just to, you know, keep abuse of animals out and save them, keep them off the roads, keep all the hunger up. So,
ooh, very, very, very cool. Well, you know, good luck in your next race, and now I can turn it over to the next panelist.
Okay.
Hey, Jake, it's Kyle. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. My question for you is, you know, this is something everyone brings up every week, cup drivers running in the Nationwide and Truck Series. Now, as long as you've raced in the Truck Series, I mean, how do you feel about cup drivers going down into the lower divisions and racing with you guys?
Well, actually, it's kind of funny to ask that. I mean, after Charlotte and I think Kansas and Dover, I think Kyle Busch won multiple races back-to-back, four or five in a row there. I don't think that it's unfair that they come back. I just think that, you know, it's more of a challenge. You know, if you do go out and beat them guys, you know, you can say, hey, I beat Kyle Busch, I beat such and such. But if they're not there, then you're just saying, hey, I beat such and such, and it's kind of like racing in the late models. You beat such and such, but if you beat somebody that their name's already established, you know, you've got something to speak for. And my mom was actually talking about that after the Charlotte race. She said, "I don't agree with the Cup drivers being able to come down and run with the younger guys in their stomping grounds." And I said, "Well, you've got to look at it. You know, they've got the funding behind them. They're wanting to do something for fun other than running Cup every weekend." And I told her, I said, if I had the funding and I had the technology and all the people and everything together, I would do the same thing that they're doing, you know? So I don't look down on them coming back down into the lower ranks and running with us because, you know, it's a challenge for everybody.
Yeah, Jake, you know, just a follow-up on that. Have you learned anything with racing with them?
Well, not really, because, you know, it's kind of hard to compete against them people, you know, with having lower-funded stuff. So, you know, I've learned a lot watching them, but as far as me getting to race with them, you know, I haven't really learned a lot just because I haven't had the equipment to run with them.
Does anyone else have a question for Jake, or should I go?
Yeah, I have one for Jake. This is Brett Wayham, and I just want to ask you, you know, you talked a little bit about earlier some of your favorite racetracks, and you mentioned Bristol as one of those, but given the racetracks that you haven't had starts yet on NASCAR Continental Truck Series schedule, which one track that you would love to go out and race at?
I would like to go to, you know, I've been to Daytona, but I haven't. I want to go to Daytona and actually be in, you know, the equipment to be able to go and compete. So Daytona would be one of them. Pocono would be one of them, and Phoenix would probably be one of them.
Thank you for answering my question, and have a great weekend.
Is that it?
From me,
right now, Jim, I have a few more questions before we let you go.
Okay.
Now, you've been racing a little bit this year. What discussions have you had with teams to get back on the racetrack?
That's just, you know, still in the works right now that I can't really speak of right now just because we're working on some sponsorship stuff, and I just don't want to let that out of the bag yet. But
But
we're working on some stuff to try to do stuff toward the end of the year, and that's about all I can really say.
Now, you were obviously able to race with SS Greenlight Racing at Dover to get your NASCAR license back at the larger tracks. What did NASCAR officials tell you when you got it back? Did they give you any advice moving forward or anything like that?
No, they just actually went up and spoke with Chad Little, and then I gave a call in to Brett Bodine and, you know, told him, you know, that I apologized for what had happened to Charlotte and, you know, hoped that what I had done at Dover was enough because we ran like 50 laps, and then the main oil line came off and leaked oil everywhere, so we weren't eligible to finish the race. So they told me it was enough, and you know, hopefully I can stay out of trouble and just move forward.
Now, where in the world did you get the snake nickname from?
Well, I actually got that when I started racing go-karts. My dad told me if I won my first race, he'd buy me a new go-kart, and I won my first race, so he bought me a new go-kart, and then we started racing with Todd Miller, and my second race, Todd Miller was, you know, kind of like my crew chief. He took me under his wing, and, you know, we went to all these state and national races together, and we used to start in the back and stuff because I'd qualify up front, but he would make me start in the back just because he wanted to teach me how to work through traffic quickly through a 20-lap race. So he just started calling me the snake because I just slid through the field like a snake. That's what he said. Plus it rhymes, so it's just a whole different bunch of, you know, combinations of why they did it. So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what's life like for you when you aren't racing?
I actually, our old sponsor, Bandit Chippers, they make a stump grinder when I'm not racing. I own my own stump grinding business, and I've got one of their stump grinders. So my brother runs a tree business, and I run a stump grinding business, you know, while I'm not racing, plus, you know, working on race cars and late model stuff. Like this weekend, we're going to I'm actually leaving tomorrow from Myrtle Beach. We're going to go up there and run that Twin 50s or whatever. I think it pays like $3,000 to go in it. So I think we're going to go up there and run that. So that's basically what I do on off days. You know, just go, you know, I say off days, but like off days as in like when we're not racing, I'm running running the stump grinding business.
All right. Thank you so much, Jake. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem, buddy.
Yeah, have a good evening.
Hey, right, thanks for coming on, Jake.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Thank you, guys.
That was Jake Crum, who's really trying to get his way back into the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series after that incident with Ryan Ellis. We spoke to Ryan Ellis a few weeks ago, and I want your take on this. Do you believe that even though Jake was running well during that race, he was running inside the top 25 and about a 30-truck field, do you believe that he should have, that NASCAR should have enabled him to get that license back, even though he was running towards the back of the pack when his engine blew up?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure on that one. Does anybody else have an opinion on that? Did we lose everybody?
No, I'm still here. Kyle's still here. You know, with that, I mean, yeah, I'm still here. I haven't left, but no, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a judgment call right there. You know, whether what NASCAR did there, you know, whether to, you know, suspend his license or not, just for, you know what he did. But like I said, I think it's all up in NASCAR's hands. I think it could go either way. You know, it's up to NASCAR, really. You know, I mean, for me, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's really, like I said, it's kind of a complicated situation there with what happened. So, I mean, like I said, I mean, you can look at it either way, but, you know, I don't think so. I mean, it might have just been a freak incident. But like I said, I mean, it's up for debate what you decide what happens there. But like I said, I think it's really, you know, it's pretty much, it's in the hands of NASCAR, and it's their judgment call to decide what to do there in that moment at that time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was a questionable call, obviously. Considering what happened during that incident, I mean, let's face it, it was obviously intentional. No matter what way, no matter how you look at it, it was intentional. And it's something that NASCAR obviously did look into with a million different angles. And Ryan Ellis was shocked when he heard that NASCAR was giving him his license back. But you know what? That's all part of the game in a way. You have to do what you – NASCAR doesn't want to have to suspend someone's license for intentional wreck. We've seen intentional wrecks in the past. A's can't suspend someone for so long, especially in the truck series, for a guy that, let's face it, he races the most six-year races in a year during the course of his career. So when you look at it, you're like, what's the point, really? Now, let's get back to the Nationwide Series. We talked a little bit about it today with Alex Tagliani in the race, but I want to talk about some other guys. Dylan Kwasniewski moving over to the 42 car because Justin Marks is in the 31 this weekend. Also, we have Sam Hornish Jr. back in the car in the number 54, replacing Kyle Busch this weekend. This guy is on a tear, gentlemen. Do you think he's going to contend for the win this weekend?
Absolutely. I don't see why not. You know, I mean, he's had Sam Hornish Jr. has had an outstanding Nationwide Series record on road courses. I mean, I know he hasn't won, but, you know, he's always run top five. I think in the last couple of years he's been on top five in every single road course race, so he definitely has the experience to go out there and win a race. I mean, you know, like you were saying, we have Alex Tagliani. And I just want to briefly touch on Dylan Kwasniewski. You know, he's having just his luck is not great at all this year. You know, everything's been falling the wrong way for him. You know, I know he's been wrecking race cars, but, you know, I think this is a really important race for him. It could make or break his season here because, you know, last year he, of course, won the K&N East Championship, and the year before he won the one out in the West. So, you know, the only driver ever to do that, win West and East back-to-back years, you know. But last year he did sweep the road course races in K&N East, and he won at Virginia International Raceway and at Road Atlanta, both from the pole. So, you know, I think for him it's going to be interesting. You know, Justin Marks, too, he could be a really, you know, he could be a sleeper. You know, could really show something here. You know, he had a brief stint in trucks in 2011 with Turn 1 Racing. So, you know, he could really, you know, go out there and show something because, you know, he does have the road course experience. I think he actually has an ARCA win on a road course. So, you know, I think any of those guys, you know, I think they could be really some guys to keep an eye on for Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely going to be someone to look out for. But the ones that I'm looking out for, Regan Smith, Elliot Sadler, and Trevor Bayne, those guys are, in my opinion at least, they're the three that the championship is going to come down to. Experience is going to pay off. Even though Chase Elliott is extremely hot this year, I don't see him winning this championship. I feel like going down the stretch, he's just going to run out of luck, and I believe that it's going to be a great thing to see Chase Elliott possibly contend for this championship, but if he doesn't, it will be okay, though. And I also think that the one driver that's really struggling and could use a good race this weekend is James Buescher. Buescher struggled immensely this year, considering his success in the Nationwide Series in the past while racing part-time. But obviously, RAB Racing isn't as big as Turner Scott Motorsports, and it probably won't be as big for at least a couple of years, considering the equipment that they have, and they're only a one-car team. Well, I ask you guys, is James Buescher, is he better off racing with RAB Racing this year, or is he had stuck with the Truck Series for one more year and then moved up with Turner Scott Motorsports next year?
I'll tell you what, with that whole situation, you know, from what I understood, you know he spent an extra year in trucks in 2013. I honestly think he spent enough time in trucks. You know, he's done everything. He won the championship, almost finished second or third last year. I think he was third in the championship standings, but you could check that. But, you know, I think, you know, sponsorship wasn't on his side when it happened because, you know, I thought after he won the championship in 2012, he was going to Nationwide with Turner Scott for sure, and it didn't happen. So, you know, and then he went to RAB Racing, and they had a ride, they had an opening there. So, you know, kind of, I think, you know, I mean, the guy who would have stayed in trucks, I would have liked to see him last year, would have been Nelson Piquet Jr. I didn't think Nelson, and honestly, in my opinion, I did not think Nelson was ready for Nationwide. You know, I think Nelson had one more year in trucks. I think with Turner Scott Motorsports, he might have been a threat for the championship. But I don't think it's a bad move going to RAB Racing. They showed some speed during speed weeks and testing. And what I remember with that whole Turner Scott deal, you know, you had Dylan Kwasniewski running for Turner Scott. There was some rumors early in the year that he would go to, that Dylan Kwasniewski would go to Nationwide and run for RAB Racing and run some ARCA for Venturini Motorsports, and particularly the Super Speedways, but it didn't happen, of course, and he stuck with Turner Scott Motorsports. But, I mean, you know, what I understand, I mean, we had James Buescher on the Fan for Racing show back when that happened, about January and February. And, you know, he said, you know, there was no ill will between him and his father-in-law, which is, of course, the owner, Steve Turner. So, you know, I'm like you said, Joseph, I am a little baffled that he's not running up there, but I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I know that team is behind a little bit. I don't know, honestly. I really thought they'd be a dark horse team this year, and James Buescher would find some success. I mean, he's run a Chevrolet for the last couple of years. You know, I know it's trucks, but he did run some part-time Nationwide. So, you know, I'm interested to see how he's going to perform the rest of the year, and maybe that team can get a second-half stride here.
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to both of them. I've spoken to James Buescher. I've spoken to Chris Rice. Both of them were very optimistic going into the year, and I spoke to Chris during mid-season before Talladega, and he was like, I don't know what's going on. We have the equipment. We have the driver. It's just we have really, really bad luck. And that kind of goes back to how Joe Gibbs Racing has been on the Cup Series side. They just have bad luck week in and week out, and it's not something that's up there doing. He's had top 10 cars week in and week out, James Buescher, but he's just, I don't know, there's something going on that's preventing him from contending for race wins. And that brings me to my next point. We have RCR cars. They were very strong in Michigan with Ty Dillon and obviously with Paul Menard winning the race. Do you think that was sort of a turning point for them?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was definitely a shot in the arm because honestly that team has been struggling, you know, for the most part anyway. I mean, you know, they definitely had some top 10 finishes and also a couple of top 5s. But yeah, that team just really needed something, and they got that in Michigan.
Yeah,
anyone
you know,
else?
I think with RCR, you know, I think Paul Menard had a really good run. That really helped that team a lot. I think right now as the point stand, he actually has a spot in the chase, you know, on points. But, you know, I mean, I think his win on Saturday helped as well. I think it gave him a little bit more confidence. You know, he's been so close so many times since his other win at Milwaukee in 2006. And, you know, I had that win at the Brickyard. So I think, you know, I think they're starting to get a gel a little bit. I'm just wondering, like, how Ryan Newman's going to do here. You know, I know he's been around the top 10 points. I think he's 11th right now. But I'm just interested to see whether he could step up his game and maybe get a win here in the summer months. As for Austin Dillon, I think he's starting to show some progress. He had some bad luck toward the end of that race. I think he had some issues on pit road. So that kind of cost him, and that really took away some of the time. So I think these next couple months are going to be crucial for RCR.
And now we're joined by NASCAR Nationwide Series Sunoco Rookie of the Year candidate, driving for Roush Fenway Racing, Chris Buescher. How are you today, Chris?
Oh, I can't complain. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for coming on our show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Now, this year so far, after missing Daytona because of the rain during qualifying, you've really turned it on lately. You have 5 top tens this year. How would you evaluate your season so far in your rookie year?
I'd say we've, kind of like you said there, we've been coming on pretty strong here lately. Our Roush Fenway Racing cars are getting better as we go through the season. You know, our last couple races have been really solid. We ran really well at Michigan in our Roush Performance Parts Mustang. Didn't necessarily finish where we were running, but you know, you'll have that. But we're definitely making progress, and I like where we're heading, and looking forward to Road America this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you actually do have a good history at the road courses in the ARCA series. How do you prepare for those tracks that you've never been to before?
It's tough. We have iRacing driving simulators at Roush that we try and do. We have tapes from previous years' races. You know, all kinds of things that we try and do to prepare ourselves as much as possible. Luckily, Road America is a track that I did run in the ARCA series. We were actually fortunate enough to win that race last year, so that was really neat. It's good to have that kind of confidence going back. Hopefully we can just pick up where we left off there.
Now I'm going to let my panel speak to you for a little bit, and I'll get back to you shortly. Guys, go ahead and ask freely.
Hey, Chris, it's
okay.
Kyle. How are you?
Doing good. You?
I'm doing well. You just brought it up. You know, your ARCA win last year at Road America. I mean, I want to know from your perspective, I mean, just take me through that. I know toward the end of the race there was a caution that you were running fifth, trying to save your car a little bit. But, I mean, just take me how you got the win. And also, just talk about driving for the Rulo brothers, you know, when you got that championship in 2012 and you also finished runner-up to Ty Dillon in 2011.
Yeah, it was a crazy race last year, no doubt. You know, it came down to the end there, and we knew we were trying to save equipment and make sure we could make it to the end of the race. And
we're actually pretty fortunate to have that caution fall when it did. It was right about the time where we really needed it. It was just one of those things where we got back racing, and my spotters were telling me, just stay right there with them. He said, just understand things are getting ready to get big in front of you, and you need to be prepared to take advantage of it. And sure enough, those guys got to racing real hard up front, and they made mistakes there in the closing laps, and we didn't. So it was really cool. It was cool getting our first win on a road course for me with the Rua brothers. They'd won a road course race or two before. And it was also awesome being that we were only running a select few last year in the ARCA series to be able to pull off a win. So had a good time there. We had a good time racing with the Rua brothers. They helped me a lot getting started and getting going in my stock car career. And we had a lot of fun with it. The ARCA championship was absolutely incredible to win. We're still the first and only person to finish every lap of a season and go on to win the title. So that's something that can never be beat. It can be matched. But it was very, very cool to be able to pull that off.
Hey, Chris, I just have one follow-up for you here. Like we were talking about Road America, about your win. I mean, how are you feeling going into this weekend's race?
Really good. Road course racing is something that I don't consider myself to be any sort of ringer or, any sort of specialty in that aspect, but it's something that I do enjoy a lot. Just a change of pace, get to go out there and, do something a little different, go have a little fun and try and make it as good as possible. So it was cool to be able to pull off the win last year at a place that, didn't really expect it. So we'll go back with the same attitude, try and run close to the front, stay out of trouble, and have an opportunity there at the end.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Anyone else have questions for Chris Buescher?
Yes, I have.
Hey, Chris, it's Stephen with Speedway Digest. I got one quick question for you. With Trevor Bain moving up at the end of this year into a full-time Sprint Cup car, and he's a veteran member of the Nationwide Series there at Roush Fenway, how does that change how you prepare for 2015 and going forward now that you won't have a veteran member like that on the Nationwide side with you guys there on the weekends?
I'm not sure that it'll change a whole lot. Trevor is very, very helpful with the races every weekend, but it's not like he's going to be far away. You know what I mean? He's going to be right next door in the Cup garage. Any help we can get from him is always appreciated, as well as Ricky Stenhouse, two guys that have a lot of Nationwide experience, and we'll be able to go to for advice. It is tough going to some of these places for the first time, but luckily, first full season here, I'll at least have several runs at all these tracks to have some experience going into next year, so won't be quite as lost. So I don't know that it'll change a whole lot. Like I said, they're easily accessible and always willing to help out as much as possible, even though they'll be in a different garage.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Chris. Appreciate you answering our question. I'm going to let the rest of the guys take over for the show. I'll be listening in. Y'all have fun.
10-4, thank you.
Steven just stole my question, but...
You can go ahead,
okay. Well, Steven just stole my questions, but I'm going to steal a question that Kyle asked our last guest, Jake Crum. A lot of fans, don't like the Sprint Cup Series drivers coming down Nationwide Series or the trucks racing. Can you just talk a little bit about, if you like them coming down and do they help you, and which one of those drivers has helped you the most?
I would consider it somewhat of a double-edged sword. Yes, it is good to compete against the toughest guys that you can to make yourself better and make your team better. On the other side of it, sometimes those guys come in with a different perspective or attitude that, you know, this is their practice in a way to be ready for their cup race the next day and don't seem to care as much, you know, especially when they put you in a tough situation when, you know, this is our Sunday, you know, for our nationwide regulars. This is our big race of the weekend, and we're trying to not only bring it home in one piece, but to go out there and win races. So we do have to have a little bit more respect for equipment, and not always, but you do run into situations where the other, you know, some of the cup drivers don't seem to care as much, and I, you know, it's an understandable situation, but it's very aggravating as well. But you know, it's always good to, like I said, run against the guys that are going to be fast when you move up, and the guys you're going to have to compete with then. So, you know, it can be taken either way. You know, I have mixed emotions on it, but I think at the moment nothing's changing, so we're just going to have to go out there and try and outrun those guys.
Thank you very much,
now,
and have a great weekend this week.
Thank you.
Now, Chris, even though you guys are on a recent hot streak, what does the team struggle with over the first 13 races?
I don't know if we've necessarily struggled with anything. We're just trying to build relationships, get used to each other. You know, just make it as smooth as possible. Make our adjustments based on knowledge of how each other or other guys react. Be able to basically unload with speed and keep the speed throughout the weekend. And I think we've gotten a lot closer as we start to run more and more races and get to know each other better. And I think as we go forward, it'll just keep getting keep progressing. So not that we necessarily had any major struggles. It's just been a chemistry thing, more or less.
Yeah, I understand that completely. And that'll develop as you move forward. Now, you guys also have 6 straight 13 finishes. How do you keep up the momentum moving forward, especially on those tracks, as you spoke about earlier, that you haven't been to before?
It's a lot of bouncing ideas off of Trevor, who has been all these tracks, and Ricky Stenhouse. You know, trying to have as much information as possible when we show up every weekend. That way we can adjust it as quickly as possible. It usually doesn't take but a couple of rounds of practice to really get in a rhythm. And then it takes the rest of the race to learn the small little tricks about places. So it is tough, but we have a very capable team. Our guys have been doing awesome. The 6 team's been making progress. We're up to 8th in points despite missing the Daytona race. You know, and that was kind of one of those flip deals. Not that we didn't have speed or we didn't deserve to be in the race. I mean, we were top 5 in practice, and I think Talladega proved we have fast cars. It's just one of those crazy deals, and, you know, that new qualifying format just caught us all off guard, and with the rain, it just a perfect storm. But we're making progress coming back. You know, 8th in points is pretty good considering what we've been through this year.
Yeah, especially since you missed Daytona. I did the math, and you'll probably be around near the top 5. Now, your name has also been thrown around quite a bit when it comes to replacing Trevor with the Wood Brothers, since he's going to race full-time in the number six car. Have you spoken to them about racing for the team next season in the famous number 21 Ford?
Yeah, so there's been no discussions as far as that goes. You know, they're still focusing on the rest of this season and getting Trevor some more good runs in. So, you know, as we get a little closer to the year, I'm sure we'll start talking a little more about where we're heading into next year, but really not a whole lot to talk about at the moment.
All right. Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate you coming on the Speedy Digest. I hope you have a great evening. And good luck through the rest of the season. We hope to have you back on soon.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Thanks for having me on here. Y'all take it easy and don't work too hard.
All right, thanks for coming on, Chris.
All right.
We have someone called. That was Chris Buescher from the Roush Family Racing. And the last thing that he said, guys, was very interesting about not having any discussions with the Wood Brothers. What do you think about that? Do you see him on racing with them in the future?
I think that's all in Roush's hands, I think, like, you know, what they decide what to do with that 21 car. I know that's the Wood Brothers ride, you know, Trevor Bayne's been running it. But I think, you know, I mean, you know, there's been names kicked out there. You've heard Sam Hornish Jr., you've heard Chris Buescher, you've heard Ryan Reed, Ryan Blaney, another. I mean, I just don't know what they want to do yet with the 21. I mean, you know, with Trevor Bayne going full-time. I mean, there's still a lot of, you know, still a lot of names still out there running part-time possibly. So, or whether they want to go to a full-time deal. But just, that's just up to the Wood Brothers and Roush Fenway what they want to do with that ride.
Yeah, you know what? It's definitely going to be interesting to see how that number 21 ride's going to go and who's going to get it. I mean, obviously, you know, there's a lot of good drivers out there, like some of the names that's been thrown around. But, you know, I just don't really see a driver that would really fit the 21 in the list. So, you know, who's going to do that, I have no idea. But, you know, it's definitely going to be, I'm sure, a surprise whenever they announce what they're going to do with that car.
Yeah, and you know what? At this point, it's too early in the season to really, you know, point the finger at the driver saying that's going to be the one that's going to take over the 21 car or to get a full-time ride. I think that we need a couple more races, and probably towards the end of the season when we have like maybe 10 or 7 races to go, we'll probably know by then, you know, whether it's going to be Chris Buescher or Ryan Reed or Trevor Bayne to get a full-time ride at Roush, or just by chance it could be all three of them.
Yeah, I think that the most likely candidate right now is actually Sam Hornish Jr., but that would only be for part-time, like they've been running. And I feel like if the Wood Brothers went back to full-time racing, they would just not succeed at all. I mean, look at how little success they had when they were racing full-time. Look at the 70s and the 60s. They were winning races left and right like that. Bam, 1, 2, 3. They were winning of Cale Yarborough and all these guys. And they were doing it in dominating fashion. And I think you're slowly but surely seeing them getting back to being competitive. No, they're not a stunning team by any means necessary, but they're a top 20 team. They're respectable. And especially if Trevor Bayne growing, that's going to help him a ton. And I think that anyone else that joins that team, they're going to get in a quality seat. And I, not to say that Trevor Bayne's not doing the best job possible, but I do believe that car is capable of running in the top 10 at the intermediate tracks at least once the entire Ford team really gets back into the groove of things. What do you guys think? Now I'm going to throw it over to Brett, and he's going to talk to you guys about his weekend at the track. Go ahead, Brett.
Okay, well, you know, this past weekend at Gateway was certainly just amazing, you know, great racing all weekend, and it was nice. It was a nice weekend just to get out of the house and cover a NASCAR race for all the great fans on Twitter and everyone who's friends with me on Facebook. Certainly had a blast. You know, this weekend was an awesome win. The highlight of it all was taking fans. I actually did a track – well, I did the track walk and kind of took a group of fans around the racetrack, showing them different things. You know, how the rules work at Gateway other than semi-racetracks. I took them out showing them how the scoring loops around the racetrack work, how the start-finish line timing and scoring worked. Showed them how to find the pit road timing lines and explained to them how they worked. And it was an interesting weekend there. certainly hope to be able to do that Iowa, you know, the track walk was fun. And then earlier that day before the track walk, I got to ride in a Pace car with Joey Coulter and went really fast around the track, did a simulated pit stop in that. So that was certainly interesting. And, you know, you don't get, you know, from watching at home what the drivers have to go through. I mean, it's pretty hard work getting on pit road, coming down the 4 or 5 miles per hour or whatever the pit road speed limit is to maintain all the way down there and then having the floor coming off the exit of the pit road. So, you know, it was a lot of fun there. Tweet up. I didn't know they were doing a tweet up until I saw the class photo on Twitter. So, you know, I was kind of bummed out that I missed that, but certainly was a good weekend, and, you know, I can't wait until Iowa. You know, I'm really looking forward to that race, mostly a King of Pro Series race, but you know, meeting Lee Spencer with Fox Sports and some more people with NASCAR IMC, and I even met Brian Eberle, who is the writer for Motor Racing Team, so... Yeah, it was a great weekend meeting people and took a lot from it, learned a lot more stuff, and can't wait till Iowa, so, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting, and it certainly was a lot of fun. I wish we could get every fan to do a pace car ride because it is just remarkable, some of the things you can gain from that, and, you know, Joseph will even tell you, because I think he took a pace car ride with Landon Castle at Pocono, and, you know, you really gain a lot of appreciation when you do those because you understand some of the things that, you know, drivers talk about, but, you know, it's just nice to be able to see it than, you know, just hearing about it, how everything works, and I certainly enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100% on that. It gives you that different aspect that no one else really gets to see, and it's incredible to see what these guys do. And the coolest part for me when it was Landon Castle was nuts enough to go on the apron in turn two. He touched it just a little bit, and that car literally jumped about halfway through the tunnel dirt. I was flipping out. He's going 140 miles an hour in his Chevy SS. You can imagine what my reaction was in the shotgun seat. It was really crazy. But Brett's right. I mean, I went in the pace car at Dover as well, and I think Dover really, like, it makes you appreciate the sport more, and it makes you want to know more about where the bumps are in the turns, what's going to shoot a car off the track, what's going to happen when the track gets hot or when it gets cold even, or what occurs exactly when it starts raining and the track goes fully green and we just lose the track completely. And it's really interesting to get the perspective from the driver, not just from the crews, but from the driver himself. And I think that's the best part about the sport. You get all this inside access, and it's incredible, really. Now, I have to go, unfortunately.
And
I would like to...
I mean, you know, you get a lot of, you know, insight. And one of the things, you know, I asked Joey about once in that case, right? You know, at Pocono, you know, they took out the bumble strips. Well, what I want to bring in this discussion with, while we have Joseph still on here, is that, you know, Gateway, you know, you look at the turns, and they also have those rumble strips like Pocono had over there. And, you know, I asked Joey if drivers or if he would think drivers might go down there during the race, and I don't know if they did or not because, you know, At the Nationwide Series or Truck Series standalone races, we don't have the fan version, so I didn't pay close enough attention to the TV broadcast to know. But I did ask Joey about, you know, if we might see some drivers go down there, and I tried talking him out of going down there, but he wouldn't do it on the pace car ride. because I kind of want to see what happened whenever, you know, a driver went down there. But yeah, I mean, you know, I it's interesting, you know, that we're not seeing drivers run as like we used to in the past. You know, pretty much they've been staying off of those. So, you know, I don't know if that played any key role at Gateway or not. But what was interesting about Gateway was the three wide we saw in turn three. I mean, that was just incredible. I did not think that we would have saw that going into the weekend. And, you know, and another thing about Gateway was the crowd was terrible. I mean, we saw fantastic racing, but the crowd in the grandstands was just terrible. I felt like that more people could have showed up, but you know, they're charging $36 for general admission ticket and you know, $20 for parking. So when you add all that up, you know, it comes out, I think, about $75. And you know, I could go to Kansas Speedway for $59 for a Cup Series for Chase Race, and it's free parking. So, you know, it just goes to show how expensive Gateway was this past weekend. So hopefully they adjust on that going into next year. You know, I'd like to see a track come back for a second time. You know, they certainly showed passion for it, but, you know, I felt the prices were kind of expensive, though.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the stands is it's not about how much the tickets are, because you compare the tickets to a NASCAR race to any other sporting event, they are really dirt cheap. But I do agree, $36 for general admission to a standalone truck race, considering they didn't even let people go see the practices on Friday, that's flat out ridiculous and taking advantage of people. But I think now that people know what to expect from those races after what they saw, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a Nationwide Series race there next year. And I definitely wouldn't be surprised if it's with the Camping World Truck Series race, assuming, of course, that NASCAR will bring Gateway back, which they probably will, considering how great of racing it is, expecting to have that turnaround in the crowd. I think that's another thing that affected the crowd. You have St. Louis hotel rates, which are obviously high, but also no one knew what to expect, and people didn't want to go all the way to St. Louis in, I believe it's in Missouri, to track, right?
It's in Illinois.
Yeah, exactly, and it's just a matter of getting not so much the funding to get to the track, just knowing what to expect. And people aren't going to make a vacation out of a truck series race, especially when you have only one day of racing, really, that fans mm-hmm. can watch off the track. That's just very disrespectful to fans, I think. If you want people to come to the race, you got to give them what they want, and what they want is to beat the race for the whole weekend, get to see all the practices, and it's just stupid what they did, honestly.
You know, I think, you know, at the same time, you know, it's, you know, fans, you know, it's hard, it's 50-50, because you look at, and, you know, I think the reasoning why they didn't open the grandstands on Friday was because they didn't want people to be everywhere and having to clean up trash and stuff, you know. But then at the same time, you know, they could have just opened up one section like Kansas did with the testing last year, just open up certain sections, just have fans sit, you know, specifically in those sections so you don't have to worry about, you know, that issue. But yeah, I mean, they should have opened up the grandstands on Friday afternoon, and I think that would have helped the attendance as well, even though that they did have a final practice early on Saturday morning, but I feel like they should have opened up the grandstands on Friday. I know that they did the last time for the Nationwide Series race. They opened them up because I remember going, but yeah, they should have had grandstands open for both days.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Now, Brett, I'm going to stop you there, I want to thank Chris Buescher and Jake Crum for coming on tonight. We had a great time talking to both of those drivers, and we learned a lot tonight, I believe, and especially considering Chris had a very interesting discussion with us, and Jake gave us the details about his license getting revoked from NASCAR and evidently getting it back just a week later, really. So that was interesting. And I'm going to throw it to you now to have your open wheel report. And have a good night, everyone.
All righty then. Well, the open wheel report tonight is going to be a little bit short because there's no IndyCar running this weekend. It'll be running next weekend. We still have them up on the truck, but this weekend the F1 series is going to go back to an old track that they used to race on. In fact, they haven't even raced on this track since 2003. It is the Formula One Grosser Paris von let's see if I can pronounce this, Ostrich 2014, or otherwise known as the Austrian GP. This nine-turn circuit is perhaps the shortest road course on the F1 circuit, 2.6 miles, really, in length. And, you know, as I said, it's the first time that they are racing here since 2003, and is now called the Red Bull Ring. It used to be called the A1 Ring. 71 laps will make up the running here, and the lap record was set by Michael Schumacher in 2003 at a 108.337. Speaking of Michael Schumacher, apparently he has awakened from his coma and is now being transported to a different medical facility. Word on his condition is unknown at this point. So we'll definitely keep tabs on him. And by the way, if you're in Australia and you are over at the Hidden Valley track, you will hear the roar of the V8 supercars descending on Darwin as fans flock to Hidden Valley to watch their heroes race on the fast picturesque course, the Sky City Triple Crown, the Triple Crown Darwin, as it's called. And everything begins in just a few hours. As a matter of fact, in about 24 hours, they will get the cars on track, and it'll be fun for three action-packed races. So that's a look at open wheel as well as the V8 Supercar Series. And so back over to you, Brett.
All right. Well, I guess now we'll move into our pick segment and.
Hey, Brett, I want to just bring up something quick before we get off the IndyCar, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You were that Pocono test fan, I believe.
Yes,
on
I was.
Tuesday,
you
so
better believe it.
Really
absolutely. Yeah, I don't want to let that go overlooked, Glenn. I know that, you know, since there's no IndyCar racing this weekend, you know, IndyCar's teams will be tested at Pocono Tuesday, and they'll be testing tomorrow as well, and I will be there. Again, Tuesday they had Penske Racing, they had Elio Castroneves, Juan Pablo Montoya, and Will Power, and also Dale Coyne Racing with Justin Wilson and rookie Carlos Huertas were there. And, you know, the only really incident of the day was Carlos Huertas, the rookie, got backed into the turn three wall. Actually, I stepped right on the pit road, and he spun out. I don't know how that happened. It just happened. So, you know, so I think, you know, I got to ask Juan Pablo a question in the media center yesterday. I asked him how the transition was, you know, from open wheel to stock car, then from stock car back to open wheel. And then, you know, he's back in the Cup car last week in Michigan. So, you know, I asked him about that. He said, you know, at first for him, you know, it was so hard getting to stock cars because, you know, he didn't race on ovals for 6 years. So, you know, it was kind of hard for him to get back into that. So, and then he told me when he went back to IndyCar this year, I think the road courses weren't bad at all for him because, you know, it's just a road course racing. And then he enjoyed doing the ovals. You know, he got his best finish at Texas 2 weeks ago, so which was a third. So, you know, that was his first podium finish since the 2000 Indianapolis 500 which he won. So, you know, so I think, you know, it looks like it's gonna be interesting. You know, as I said, you know, the curb is gone in turn two in the tunnel turn of Pocono Raceway, and no Cup drivers actually tried that on the during the Cup race 2 weeks ago at Pocono. So, You know, so because actually the tunnel turn is actually more banking up than on the actual track itself, and that where the curb used to be. So I don't know whether you'll see any drivers racing, but tomorrow we'll have Andretti Autosport there. We'll have Carlos Munoz, Ryan Hunter Ray, Marco Andretti, also KV Racing, Sebastian Bourdais and Sebastian Saavedra, and also we'll have Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing with Graham Ray Hall. So I think really tomorrow is going to be another good day to be out on the track. You know, the weather's been really good here. It's been a little warm, but nevertheless, there hasn't been no rain. So, I'm not sure what the times have been. The teams have not released that. But, last year, Marco Andretti set the track record, actually shattered it. The old track record was, I think, 211 miles an hour set by Emerson Fittipaldi, and that was back 25 years ago in 1989, the last time they were there before 2013. So, and Marco just had a two-lap average of over 221 miles an hour on the Pocono Raceway. So, and he had one of the best cars last year. And Chevy's had some issues with fuel mileage late in the race, and Honda's took six of the first seven spots, with Chip Ganassi going 1-2-3, with Scott Dixon winning the race prematurely. Kind of got him on a streak, winning three in a row and going on to win the championship. So, it's going to be a good race. Tomorrow's going to be interesting with them testing. Maybe they go faster. I'm not sure what the package is like, but the ovals have been pretty good with IndyCar. I mean, you've seen it in Indianapolis the last couple of years. You saw, all the oval races have been great in IndyCar. So I'm really pumped to see what happens in the Pocono IndyCar 500 in July. And also one more thing, and then I'll get off the topic. Last year was a 400-mile race. This year it's a 500-mile race. So 40 additional laps, 100 miles, has been added to the race. So I think fuel may not be an issue as much, but Will Power said with the Chevys that, I think this year's more equal with fuel mileage. So I'm going to be interested to see how that plays out when the Pocono IndyCar 500 comes in July, and see whether, that the Chevy, maybe a Chevy driver can seal the deal this time around.
All right, very interesting, and also good to know that there is some testing going on. So, yeah, we go into our pick section. And so, pretty much, I think the way that we're going to do this, we're going to do it the old-fashioned way, like we used to do on another old show, is basically one of us basically says our picks for all three divisions. So, let's see. I think Brett went first last week, so that would mean I would go first this week. So, in F1... I have a feeling those Red Bull Renaults are going to be hard to beat because it's basically their home turf. They have the most laps around there, and I have a feeling Sebastian Vettel is going to do pretty well, so I'm picking him. In the Nationwide Series race, I got to go with this. They're racing at Road America. I got to go with my open wheel background and say Alex Tagliani will win the race. As for the Cup Series race, this is a little hard to decide. But I think I'm going to go with Jimmy Johnson. So now, Brett, you go ahead and say your picks for all three divisions.
All right. Well, for Formula One, I think this week I'm going to go with... I think I'm going to go with Lewis Hamilton. My
Lewis
next
Hamilton
is pick.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
and
Lewis
then,
Hamilton.
And then my Nationwide Series pick, I think it's definitely going to be an interesting mix. I think Alex Pagliani is going to be a good one. I'm going to go with Kenny Hubbell for Joe Gibbs Racing in the number 20. And then for Sprint Cup Series.
Kenny Hubbell, okay.
And then for the Sprint Cup Series, that one's a hard one to choose. But I think I'm going to go with Jeff Gordon.
Ooh, all right. So I got a teammate to beat here. All right. Gordon's in a brand new car, the Panasonic number 24. I saw a picture of it. It looks really cool. So those are our picks, and I believe we've come to the end of the show, right?
Hey guys, you're forgetting about somebody, I think.
Kyle.
Oh yeah, Kyle.
I think this is taking some time, but that's okay. I understand. I'll make it quick. F1, I know a little bit about F1. Daniel Ricciardo won that fantastic finish in Canada you know, with what happened with the Mercedes cars. I think I know Mercedes has shown the speed and Red Bull's been strong. I'm going to go with Nico Rosberg. I think Mercedes has been strong this year. Nationwide, since you guys haven't picked him, I'm going to take Sam Hornish Jr. I think he's finally going to get his first Nationwide Series road course victory. And then for Sunday's Cup race, I'm going to go with the guy who probably won this race in 2011, had great runs the last 2 years. I'm going to go with Kurt Busch. So there are my picks for the weekend.
All right. Can you say your F1 pick again, because I did not catch it?
I took Nico Rosberg.
Nico Rosberg. Okay, thank you. So Nico Rosberg. And got it.
Where'd you go with Glenn?
Say it again?
Who did you go with, Glenn?
I took Sebastian Vettel.
Okay.
Yeah, so pretty much I got to beat you two over there at Mercedes, which I think could be pretty easy. And of course I got Tagliani, and then I got Jimmy Johnson. Yeah, and so so those are our picks for this weekend. So good luck to everybody's picks.
All right, well, that will end the show tonight. Oh, wait. I forgot something. We're going to go into our final thoughts, starting with them.
Oh, that's right, the final thoughts. Well, I'll go ahead and say mine because I need to get off. So you can follow me on Twitter at IndyCarGL2048. I might be going to the vintage car deal on Friday over at All Club Speedway. So if you're going to be heading out there and, checking them out on a Friday, you know, let me know, and maybe we can tweet up or whatever. There's going to be a lot of cool cars out there, and we'll see what happens out there. And so thank you guys for having me on once again, and hope to see you all next week.
Okay. Okay, well, Kyle, so...
Yeah, so, you know, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Magda, also on Facebook. I have my site, Life Kyle. I did a post last week. I do some more. I have the Overdrive show. I have to start doing that again. And for me, you know, final thoughts, I think it's going to be a great week in road course racing. Definitely looking forward to everything this weekend, the Nationwide race, the Canaan West race, even the Canaan East race out at Langley Speedway on Saturday. That's going to be a good one. Also, the ARCA race at Elko Speedway on Saturday night. That race will actually be televised live on CBS Sports Network. Check your local provider to see what channel that's on. And also the Cup race at Sonoma on Sunday. And like I said, I was at the IndyCar test for Pocono yesterday, and I'll be there tomorrow as well. So it's going to be a great weekend, you know, with Pocono and IndyCar tests and also the road courses. So I'm really looking forward to it.
All right. And you can follow me on Twitter at NASCAR_Brett or on Facebook, Brett Winham. Hope everyone has a great night. And hopefully we see some great racing this weekend. And hope everyone enjoys it. And talk to you all next Monday. Or, I'm sorry, next Wednesday. So long, everyone.